This is a special presentation from 90.5 WESA. On Tuesday, September 25th, WESA held a community forum on school safety. The forum was held at the Pittsburgh Community Broadcast Center on the South Side, and it was moderated by WESA's Sarah Schneider. The public was invited to attend and participate in the discussion. Tonight, WESA presents that conversation. It was edited for time.
Tonight, we are here to discuss school safety. What that means, how schools are protecting students, and the consequences that are sometimes associated with efforts in the name of safety. I'm Sarah Schneider, and I report on education for WESA, and I'm joined by a panel of people who are involved in this work in different ways. First, we have Aaron Vanetta, a school resource officer for the Quaker Valley School District. He also sits on the board of directors for the National Association of School Resource Officers and the Friends of Safe Schools USA Pennsylvania chapter. Hi, Aaron.
Hi.
We have Micah Lee Williams. She's a policy program associate with ACLU Pittsburgh. She's working on a grant-funded program to reduce young people's involvement in the criminal justice system. Hi, Micah.
Hello.
And Nia Arrington, she's a recent graduate of the Creative and Performing Arts School. It's a Pittsburgh public school. And Nia is also the co-founder of the Pittsburgh-based Youth Power Collective. Hi, Nia. And Angel Gober, the Education Justice Organizer for the Education Rights Network, a campaign of One PA. Hi, Angel.
Hello.
So I also want to note that we did extend invitations to Pittsburgh Public Schools Police Department, and they could not make anyone available for this panel. I won't be the only one asking questions of our panelists tonight. We also want to hear from you. We want your voices to be heard. Whether you already have a question in mind or one comes to you during the discussion, we'd love to hear from you. You probably found the question cards on your seats, so you can fill those out. If you want me to read them, that's just check that box. And if you want to read them or ask your own question of the panelists, we have Chris Ayers in the back. You hear his voice every day on All Things Considered. And Chris is going to come around and pick up those question sheets from you and also bring you, he's going to hold a microphone for you if you want to ask a question. All right. So this is a sensitive topic and one that people have very strong views about, and I want to keep in mind that we're here to learn about those views and share an informed dialogue with the public. So this spring, hundreds of local students rallied and organized walkouts in the March for Our Lives after 17 people were killed in Parkland, Florida, a high school, and they asked for lawmakers to protect them in a variety of ways, including universal background checks to obtain a firearm and funding intervention programs to reduce gun violence. And school districts, you know, were quick to react to questions of how are you keeping students safe. We saw more active shooter drills in our region, and a handful of area districts moved to arm school police officers. But also at the top of mind for many people are the consequences of those safety efforts. You know, we know that children of color are disproportionately arrested in schools, including Pittsburgh Public Schools. We know that children of color and children with disabilities are disproportionately suspended from school. And we know that being removed from school increases a child's likelihood to later be involved with the justice system, something often referred to as the school-to-prison pipeline. So we're going to get into all of that, but with that said, first question, I want to start by asking our panelists if any of you want to describe, you know, the reactions you saw schools and lawmakers take after the Parkland shooting. Does anyone want to start us off?
I can start that one off. So after the Parkland shooting, I was a senior in high school last year, and so me and a few of my friends were quick to organize a walkout that we did a week after the shooting, and we got a lot of just like national attention, local attention, and coverage from staging a walkout. I'd say the initial reaction of walking out was we were going to be suspended from school for walking out, so like that kind of touched on like, can you be an activist and a student, or like, are you allowed to walk out of your school? So it really sparked a big debate, I'd say, in our school district, where they decided that they weren't going to suspend us. The next day, they saw their name on the front page of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette saying that Kappa students will be disciplined. So it changed their mind very fast. And I'd say that's like what really like sparked off some of the movement, was the students like showing acts of civil disobedience and like adults not really knowing how to handle it, because the topic was something that was directly affecting students, and students weren't walking out to be disrespectful. They were walking out because that could have easily been their school. And so I think that really gave like people a chance to think about like, can youth be activists, and like, do we need to listen to these young people? So after that happened, we organized a bus trip of about 200 plus students from Pittsburgh, and we went to the March for Our Lives. So we were covered by CNN and got like lots of students travel. We had 60 survivors or were related to someone that had been a victim of gun violence who traveled with us as well. So that was a really important piece in that. Traveling to the March for Our Lives, meeting different student organizers from around the just like country really, who are coming together doing this for the first time or had been organizing prior. Like, it was really like a spark, I think, in movement for young people. And I'd saw students I had gone to school with who I never really knew they had political views before. They were like quiet about something like that, outwardly expressed that this is something that they were gonna stand up for and that they weren't going to like let continue happen. So I'd say like the reaction from students was that we were gonna band together and like we are gonna make sure that we are safe if no one else was gonna make sure that happened. And I think the reaction from adults and a lot of just like, yeah, like school officials and things were like, well, how are we gonna like protect the kids? So like, we're gonna put more guns, or like, we're gonna make it harder to get into the school, or like, we're really gonna search everyone's bag intensely this morning at the metal detectors, or we're gonna, our own state, like, we're gonna throw $80 million into making all of our schools safe when they couldn't really give us any of that money previously. But I saw just a lot of movement, like people were kind of standing still, like Columbine had happened, other places had happened, and like there was little to no movement. But I think this time people saw that like the youth were done and like we made a mark, and so they kind of had a rapid response too. And we're not sure if their rapid response is like really what we're willing to accept. So that's the stage that I think we're in now.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get into funding a little bit later, but maybe Erin, you know, you're involved with the National Association of School Resource Officers. That was close. You know, what changes did you see after the Parkland shooting when it comes to school resource officers?
Well, I think we all got a little bit complacent, and school safety kind of went on the back burner. Unfortunately, that tragedy occurred, and we've seen some stuff going on lately. You know, there's been a lot of discussions, obviously. There's been a lot of legislation that was introduced, some recent legislation that passed through Act 44 and Act 39. So, you know, and I've participated in a great deal of that stuff. I worked with Representative Dan Miller out of Mount Lebanon on some, you know, specific legislation that he introduced on the, you know, training of school resource officers to make sure that they had the proper training to work with students with special needs, you know, diversity, those types of things, use of force, de-escalation techniques. So unfortunately that bill is, you know, on the floor still. I've also participated in the Senate Majority's Commission on School Safety Roundtable discussion, which is traveling around the state right now. I participated in McMurray, and I talked about the same thing, that it's very important. You know, we have a rush to put these school police officers or school resource officers in the school, but it's very, very important that we have carefully selected and properly trained police officers in our schools. So that's what I've been working on with our legislators here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And on a national level, some of my good friends and colleagues, you know, Rudy Perez from Los Angeles, folks like that are down at the national, the Federal Commission on School Safety, and they're testifying in front of, you know, some very important people from the Attorney General, you know, the Director of Health and Human Services, Secretary of Health and Human Services, you know, Director of Homeland Security, people like that, and they're pushing for the same thing, carefully selected, properly trained school resource officers. So, you know, I think that's the push on the National Association of School Resource Officers end.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything you wanted to add? So, Micah, I will ask you, you know, as I mentioned in the beginning here, this focus on school safety is related to, you know, I hear a lot in Pittsburgh public schools and conversations at school board meetings, you know, an emphasis on what it could lead to, you know, the school to prison pipeline. Could you just tell us a little bit about your work and, you know, what's the end goal? What do you want to accomplish in two years, right?
Sure. So we're part of a two-year project that picks up where some other research left off. Pitt did a study that found that disproportionately black and brown students were being arrested and punished in general. It was either high rates of black students generally, or both, high rates of punishment where police were involved in schools, but there was not enough research as to sort of why this was happening. So our research picks up there, and we're looking at school districts that we see as, you know, we're just picking a handful of districts that we see as having a need of intervention to figure out, you know, which students are being punished, why they're being punished, and to decrease the criminalization of students in schools. Mm-hmm. So that's our two-year goal.
Okay. So when we're talking about safety in schools, that looks different to a lot of people, you know. I'm trying to think, you know, how do you reconcile with the fact that some parents that I hear from in my work want the school police officer to be there, right? They want the metal detectors, that's safety to them. And then you have parents who want nothing to do with that. They don't want school police officers in the building, they don't want metal detectors. How do you reconcile the two?
I think one of the issues is that the idea of safety is kind of lumped all together. And when we think about what are we keeping kids safe from? Are we keeping them safe from outside harms? Are we keeping them safe from inside harms? Are we, you know, trying to protect them from everyday harms? And, you know, like, you know, just like you would have a different means of keeping your house safe, you would have a different, you know, approach to being street safe or, you know, protecting your identity. So we can't necessarily approach the idea of safety from a one perspective. And so it's a nuanced conversation. And I think, you know, like you're saying, it's a response right now. And as the other panelists were talking about, there's an increased response to the idea that somebody could come into your school and shoot someone. It is difficult to reconcile, but what needs to happen, I think, is more research. First of all, the Secret Service just came out with a report, I believe in July, that said there's no one profile for a school shooter, you know? So we don't have any research and there is also, in addition, no research that shows that having a police presence in schools keeps schools safer. Santa Fe, Columbine, all places where there were school resource officers and there were high rates of fatality. Certainly, police have a role to play. The question is having police in schools, keeping the schools safer, if, you know, if they're there on a regular basis. And I think that is research that needs to happen before we can make an assumption that having armed officers in our schools is making our schools safer. And especially when we're seeing that, you know, and respectfully to my guest, who seems very eloquent and educated on the subject of what he does, but school resource officers are not first and foremost child psychiatrists, child psychologists, they're not first and foremost counselors, though often they see themselves in the roles of being mentors, educators, and also law enforcement. Their first role is law enforcement. And as we're talking about this, there's no standardized training. Nationally, you know, they're not necessarily, I've seen reports that where resource officers were interviewed, they didn't have any cultural or gender training. You know, there's a lot of issues around sexual harassment that happen for young black women, especially in schools when they're dealing with security and SROs. So these are things that we need to look more closely at what the secondary effects are of having police in schools, and also understand that there is no proof that having police, armed police in schools makes our schools safer. So I think we need to just come at the conversation from a more nuanced standpoint as opposed to a fear-based reaction.
Okay. Erin, I'll let you respond to that. You know, what is the role of a school resource officer in buildings? You know, you train officers, and I mentioned that, but what are you, you know, why are you there? What's the goal? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, I mean, my philosophy on school safety is that it's a multi-pronged approach, and the most important piece to that is, you know, building relationships, making sure kids feel connected, making sure kids feel safe, making sure that they feel respected and treated fairly across the boards. You know, a child that feels safe and healthy doesn't naturally turn to violence. So I think by putting our officers in those schools to be mentors and educators, we can help to build those relationships. We can help bridge that gap between, you know, the officers out on the street and the police officers in the school. You know, a lot of times these students, their only dealings with the police officer is a traumatic negative event. Maybe mom and dad got in a fight. Maybe they were in a violent car accident. Maybe there was a, you know, some kind of violence in their neighborhood or something like that. So they're only seeing the negative parts of what police officers do. So by us getting into the schools and working with them every day and being mentors, coaching them, teaching them in classes on things from, you know, traffic safety, drug and alcohol awareness, internet safety, cyberbullying, you know, you name it. We get in their classrooms and we talk to them and we teach them. They get to see that we're just like them, that, you know, we're human beings also, you know, and we have different programs out there. You know, you mentioned, you know, the pipeline to prison. You know, one of my best programs at Quaker Valley is the peer jury program, which is a school-based court diversion program. I place kids in front of that peer jury 90% of the time to, you know, keep them out of court. And it not only keeps them out of court, but it teaches them a life lesson. You know, it teaches them the practical approach to our American government system. It teaches them that, you know, they have positive peer influences, that they don't only have to fall into negative peer pressure, stuff like that. So, you know, it's programs like that that we do every day, day in and day out, that are changing the lives of students everywhere. And I think, you know, well, I know that, you know, some of our other folks from the National Association of School Resource Officers, you know, our executive director, Mo Kennedy, our past president, Dawn Bridges, the guy from Maryland, Chris Fraley, the regional director down there, you know, they've all testified in front of the Federal Commission on School Safety, and they've testified about, you know, the training that is required. They testified about the job and about what we do. And I mentioned Rudy Perez from California. He's from the Los Angeles School District Police. If you listen to his testimony, how he got involved in this field was the school resource officer at his school in Los Angeles changed his life. So, you know, we're doing a lot of good things out there that maybe people don't realize. They think we're just, you know, hired guns, or that we're, you know, there to arrest kids and, you know, try and arrest our way out of different problems. But that's absolutely not the case, you know.
The court or the peer jury you were talking about, I just want to clarify, what types of incidents are those?
You know, we've put all kinds of different incidents in there. So, you know, obviously it has to be something appropriate. We're not going to, you know, put a case through the peer jury where, you know, somebody brings a firearm or something to school. But if a kid inadvertently brings a pocket knife to school and that, you know, is brought to the school administration's attention, you know, there's some serious consequences for possession of a weapon on school property. But we can now handle that, you know, through a school-based court diversion program where those kids don't have to go to juvenile court. Those kids don't have to get that paper trail. Those kids don't have to get that criminal record. And they learn the same lessons. Mm-hmm. So it could be something like that. It could be possession of, you know, marijuana, it could be possession of a controlled substance, it could be a theft offense, it could be harassment, it could be, you know, fighting, disorderly conduct. So really, it could be any kind of criminal offense that would be appropriate for, you know, their peers to address.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I just want to respond to what you said. First, I wanted to respond to, like, I don't think there can be carefully trained or selected police officers in a school or at all just because of, like, well, first, like, you have to say, like, who's defining carefully selected. And if it's, like, the PA Safety Task Force, that's just a group of a bunch of white guys, and they're going to, like, decide what's carefully selected, and it's just probably going to be people like them. So it's probably not going to really serve everyone unless, like, your security guards are going to be, like, racially biased tested, like, going to be tested for, like, a number of biases, like, a number of things. Like, for, in my opinion, if you're going to work with students from all walks of life, all colors, all religions, speaking different languages, different nationalities, like, it's going to be really hard to find anyone to enforce rules on them. And so, like, police officers and, like, the system of policing entering schools, like, kids aren't criminals. And for like, you to use the language and saying, like, we put them just, like, criminal, like, charges into the peer court, and it's the same thing, like, they come out feeling maybe, like, ashamed of what they did, like, isn't really good either, because, like, we're youth, and, like, a lot of youth aren't fully developed, so in the brains, so, like, if youth want to bring, like, if someone accidentally brings weed to school, which is illegal, like, and they just, there wasn't a school security guard or something, and it just stayed in their bag all day, and they went home with it, nothing would happen, and, like, they didn't smoke it at the school, they didn't really do anything, but, like, you add a school security guard to the equation or something, that student can be arrested, that student can be expelled, that student can be pushed out and sent to an alternative school, which ostracizes them from the rest of the school population, setting them back. I just don't really know of many positive outcomes there has been when school police are entered into the equation, because if we want to keep kids safe, we want to allow them to be kids and to grow and to make mistakes in an environment that is a school, instead of letting them know, like, you made this one mistake when you were 15 years old in your high school, and now you're leading down a road that might end you up in prison a couple years from now. And so I think if we can do anything to protect our kids, it would be to keep them out of this criminal justice system that doesn't bring justice to poor folks, disabled folks, or folks of color most of the time. So, like, by putting that type of system that is already inherently racist, systematically racist, and institutionally racist, you're just really setting these students up for failure. Like, that's all I can see coming from that. And, like, I don't think we're keeping kids safe if we are allowing kids to be arrested. There are more school police officers arresting students for things that they did in school, like disruption of the school day, than they are arresting school shooters or arresting school intruders. So, like, if we want to think about who the school police really are keeping safe, we need to look at what the things the school police are doing. So, like, are they keeping the school safe from outside threats? Are they keeping the school safe, like, by using the law of, like, America enforced inside schools on children? So, like, I just don't really think that we can have a really positive outcome with school police officers until people stop being racist, or I don't know, like, we come up with something different, because this isn't the way, and I know that it isn't the way, so.
I'm going to give Angel a moment to respond, but I just want to remind everyone that we want to hear from you, too. We want your questions. So if you have a question, raise your hand, track down Chris Ayers. He's in the back, or you can write a question on the sheet of paper. Angel, I want you to respond to some of what Nia brought up, some solutions or alternatives to school police. You've you know, you have the Counselors Not Cops campaign. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what you want to see happen in, this is specifically Pittsburgh Public Schools, correct?
Well, we could just go home now because Nia didn't put it all the way out to, so. But absolutely, I mean, I 100% agree with Nia. And when I think about school safety, I actually don't think about school police and school security guards and metal detectors. When I think about school safety, I think about a very well-resourced school where staff have relationships with parents in the community, where students have all of the things that they need to thrive, where kids with disabilities are being respected and their IEPs are being followed. And I think about a culture where adults are actually having conversations about how we really educate each individual student. And so, you know, there's a lot of different models that are actually working across the country that don't involve, you know, increasing school safety budgets. You know, if we're going to, and you can't take away, you can't continue to defund public education and increase funding for criminalization and safety and over-policing. Like, the two of those things, the imbalance is incorrect. So it actually should be reversed. If we're going to take money, you know, from the state budget or locally, like, we should not invest that into over-policing our students and making them, you know, criminals, but we should think about how we can have real restorative practice programs, you know, have real activities where kids can vet and have space where, you know, teachers and school staff are not escalating with students, right? We know that de-escalation works. And if it's used correctly, then there's no need for school police to interfere with minor behavioral issues. Like, it's just not appropriate. You know, so we talk about, and it's working in other places. Like, we don't just pull these things out of a hat, right? So it's, you look at different models around the country. You think about community schools. You think about investment into community schools and how they are actually operating and running, and they're closing the student achievement gap. A lot of schools, there's schools in Baltimore that have zero suspension rates. I visited a school in Baltimore back in the spring, which is a full-functioning community high school in Baltimore, Maryland, in the hood, and they did not have security guards. They did not have metal detectors, and they had every staff in that school knew exactly what was going on with every single child and family in that school.
Can you explain what a community school means in case people don't know?
So when you think about a community school, you think about the needs of families and community. So we do understand that, you know, we do have populations of students that, you know, are in poverty, you know, whose families are, you know, not making ends meet, who are still, you know, under the poverty line. And you think about all of the barriers that children have to deal with before they even enter the school building. So, you know, if we can assess exactly what those needs are in like a thoughtful and respectful way, and just provide services right inside of a school building for families, for mom, dad, grandma, caregivers, whomever, students, you know, then we can kind of have more of a holistic approach about how we think about education. Because, you know, if you're not thinking about basic human needs first, you're not talking about educating no kids. So, you know, when you think about community schools, it's an actual model where it's all in. You know, everybody's paying attention. It's fully resourced. It's sustainable. You have real services that are evaluated because, people will say, well, we have this service program in our school and we have this other program. But, you know, any smart person can write a grant and get $100,000 to run a program for 2 years, but then that money dries up. So that service is not sustainable. So we just really need to think about how we can sustain real services in the schools. And make sure that everyone is involved. Like, parents have to be involved in decision making. Community members have to be involved. Teachers have to be involved, right? Because at the end of the day, people know what they need. Mm-hmm. So it's just making sure that folks are at the table and providing real services for students and families.
This is a special 90.5 WESA presentation of a community forum on school safety. The forum is moderated by WESA's Sarah Schneider. The panelists are Aaron Venata, police officer at Quaker Valley, regional director of the National Association of School Resource Officers, and regional director of Friends of Safe Schools USA, Pennsylvania. Micah Lee Williams, policy program associate with ACLU Pittsburgh. Nia Arrington, a recent graduate of the Creative and Performing Arts High School and co-founder of the Pittsburgh-based Youth Power Collective, and Angel Gober, education justice organizer for the Education Rights Network. We now rejoin their conversation.
And Pittsburgh Public Schools did pass a community schools model. They implemented it last year in 5 schools. So that's something, and you hear that a lot in ways to prevent behavior, right? To prevent suspensions, community schools is part of that. Also, you know, restorative justice of making sure when behavior happens that you intervene in a way that keeps a kid in school. Pittsburgh has also moved to I could name them all, the positive behavior intervention supports, which is supposed to prevent it from happening, right? But with all this in mind, we know that school police are here and that school resource officers are being hired more across the state. So, and we'll get to that funding piece that Nia mentioned. But with all this in mind, you know, what needs to happen to ensure students are treated fairly, equitably? I think it was Micah that mentioned there's no mandated training. So what needs to happen at a state, local level?
No national training.
Can I speak to that, please?
Yes.
So one of the things that our organization is, you know, testifying in front of the Federal Commission on School Safety is for standardized training. And both of these guys bring up some very excellent points, you know, and they are very concerning. We right now offer a 40-hour block of instruction for a basic school resource officer.
When you say we,
who's the National Association of School Resource Officers. There's also an advanced course. And some of the issues that are addressed during that week-long course are diversity, understanding special needs students, understanding the team brain, trauma-informed care, you know, violence and victimization, you know, youth drug trends, all the things that we're talking about up here. And when I first, you know, started speaking, I said that school safety has to be a multi-pronged approach. And that goes right along with what these guys are saying. You know, we have to have community partnerships as one of those prongs. You know, we have to have our local agencies involved, whether it's mental health agencies, social service agencies, other types of wellness, you know, our local first responders, other police agencies, all of that stuff, including, you know, like she mentioned, the parents. Mm-hmm. You know, that's very important. And, you know, we have to empower them. So we have to have things like, you know, tip lines and be involved in social media, have, you know, parent nights and, you know, PTA and HSA meetings and do things like that so they feel comfortable and that, you know, they share information so we can kind of, you know, curtail this before it happens. Some of the other stuff that we need to do is have adequately trained, you know, faculty, staff, and students using age-appropriate, you know, non-fearful, developmentally appropriate resources, you know, training them in a proactive, options-based response where, you know, we empower them to make decisions to increase survivability. Those things, along with that, you know, connectivity, equity, building relationships, making kids that feel healthy, safe, just like she mentioned, you know, it's like the whole child approach. You know, those types of kids that feel healthy and safe do not turn to violence. So, you know, that's very important. And then the last piece to that, which, you know, is also addressed in the recent, you know, funding that was released for these grant process, is safe and secure buildings. And by that, I don't mean, you know, metal detectors. You know, I actually, you know, don't agree with metal detectors either, you know, so I think that you do have to have access control. You just can't have everybody walking in and out of the building. You do have to have visitor management systems. You got to know who's coming in your building. You got to, you know, kind of get a little background on those folks. Things like that, you know, two-way radios, things that we can communicate, you know, special kind of emergency notification applications, not only for school violence, but, you know, we have to have an all-hazards approach. You know, we got to be mindful of, you know, severe weather here in Western Pennsylvania. You know, where Quaker Valley's located, we're along the busiest railroad tracks, you know, at one time in the world. You know, currently it's probably in the United States. So, you know, we got trains going up and down the tracks all day long. We've got an industrial park straight across from our high school. We've got a river. We're right along the Ohio River. And then we got a highway, 65. So there's all kinds of vulnerabilities that we have right there. So, you know, we have to have an all-hazards approach and, You know, that's another benefit of having, you know, a carefully selected, properly trained school resource officer, because they can help, you know, develop those emergency operations plans. They can help, you know, worry about some of those other hazards that are out there. It's not all about, you know, focusing on school violence, but, you know, the whole idea of, you know, that we are vulnerable to different things, whether they're environmental, technological, you know, or man-made. So,
Micah, yeah,
I agree that you know, preparedness is important. School safety is important, and I think many of the things just mentioned are useful. I just don't necessarily think that police need to be stationed in schools full time to have that kind of safety response. Also, just to speak to the training, 40 hours is not a lot of training when you're talking about dealing with children. You know, teachers have to go to university, psychologists, psychiatrists have to spend years studying their craft. I'm a yoga teacher part-time, I'm an attorney, I do policy, and I'm a yoga teacher. I did 200 hours of training, and I'm expected to do more. So I'm just saying, you know, in context, 40 hours is not really that much. When you're talking about people who are carrying weapons and where their first training is as officers. I think, I do believe, you know, I think I also want to say, first and foremost, I don't think any of us are on opposite ends of this. This is not a binary conversation. There's no us and them. Everybody wants kids to be safe. You know, we all really, we agree on that. Just how we go about it is where we disagree. And you know, unfortunately, the research has shown that Black and brown students don't actually feel safe when there are SROs. If you ask them directly, you know, depending on their level of interaction, they feel less safe. They don't feel more or less safe from outside threats when they have SROs. So it's not helping them feel safer from threats coming into the schools. There needs to be more research on that. But at the end of the day, what is absolutely clear is that Black and brown students are being penalized for, and even some of the language used earlier, you know, criminal behavior like fighting. It's not criminal behavior, that's kid behavior. You know, kids scuffing in the schoolyard, that's like age old, you know? Being defiant, talking back, even vandalism. These are all things, kids testing boundaries are not, you know, this used to be go to the principal stuff, and now we've involved officers, and so what ends up happening is kids end up with citations, they end up arrested for those very offenses. These things, people assume that when you have a juvenile record, it doesn't follow you into adulthood. That's not true. If you're not savvy, if you don't understand the system, and let's face it, most of us don't, that can easily follow you, and that will affect your, you know, if you apply for the military, if you apply for any kind of professional license, getting a job. You know, those things follow very tangibly into not good consequences, kids into the future, into adulthood. And unfortunately, they are predominantly Black and brown students.
And with disabilities.
And with disabilities. The most, the highest, and that's as a federal statistic, the most, I think, believe suspended student is a Black male student with disability.
That's the data that, so we also do research and data at Education Rights Network, and we put out two reports around suspensions here in Pittsburgh Public Schools. We're working on the 2016-17 report to come out in a few weeks. But, you know, absolutely, you know, we say all this, so we also do direct rapid response with families with kids with disabilities or families with kids that are facing, 10-day or expulsion from their schools. And a lot of times, if school administration would just respect the IEP, we would have a major drop in suspensions, right? So, like, if we sit down and put an individual plan for this baby, you know, and you don't even bother to read it or respect it or implement it, you know, then a lot of times kids are, you know, continue to be pushed out or suspended, or what they like to do is say, oh, your kid's having a bad day, come get them. You know, so, like, that's another opportunity for that child to miss instruction time and one more day that they're not in the classroom.
Which is correlated with long-term effects like system involvement, justice system.
Absolutely.
I want to say one thing. Like, in the last 4 years, there's been, like, 18,000 missed days of school, like, just of students. And, like, in the last 4 years as well, there's been, like, 175 10-year-olds arrested or given citations, and 143 of them were Black, and 22, yeah. were white. So, like, that's another thing. It's just, like, that's showing the system in play in our own school district. Like, I don't think those numbers just happen by accident. I do think things like implicit bias do come into effect. Many of the cases were for disruption or, like, disorderly conduct, like, mouthing off. Like, they were given a citation or even arrested just for getting smart with someone. And, like, today I've been doing outreach calls and, like, also over the last week getting students to sign a petition and informing them about our school police having a presentation on Monday about getting guns. And I was telling Angel on the way here, I wish that I could record the phone calls and record the kids' reactions the moment that I say the school police want to get guns, because every single reaction is worthy to be caught on camera, recorded, and that itself could be like a commercial or like something to play for the school board members. The reactions of the what? Like who? The school security guards, like in our school, like everyone. I haven't met one student that thought it was a good idea. Like not one student that I've talked to said that they think that was a great idea.
So my name is Dr. Claire Cohen. I'm a child psychiatrist. I have done a lot of work in schools for 15 years. I was a school psychiatrist at Pace School, and then I have done stuff for IU number one for a number of years. So I just decided before coming here to try to see what research has been done of the impact of school resource officers in the school nationally. So in 1999, President Clinton spearheaded as part of the COPS grant for community policing, school partnerships. So police have actually been in the schools for quite a while, since 1999. And by last year, 42% of high schools and 36% of middle schools had police in the schools. So in 2013, Congress had a study done to try to see the impact. What was it making schools safer or not? Were there unintended consequences? So what they saw was the jury was mixed in terms of safety in the schools. Clearly, there were some instances where having a police there made a difference in a potentially violent situation, but then there were other situations. Parkland is an example, but that where there was a police officer who was armed and still there was a shooting. But the troubling thing that did come out of that report was that in schools that had police in the schools, the rate of referring kids to law enforcement for nonviolent behaviors and getting them criminalized went up dramatically. And it wasn't because nonviolent offenses were increasing. It was because all of a sudden, a kid throws a spitball. Oh, there's the school police. Refer them to the police. What I want to ask the panels, what kind of approach should we be using? Is this a reasonable way to go through it? And if we are going to put police in school, should we have criteria or guidelines on when they should be called, right, or when they should never be called?
Right.
And when kids are having misbehavior, what are other alternatives besides having police in the schools? And what do those alternatives work? Do they work better?
Mm-hmm.
And how should we fund those? Because it seems like one of the issues is a funding issue. We're funding police, but we're not funding counselors, yoga,
yeah, right, so trainers, and so on. You're asking the difference between discipline issues and an issue that the police department would typically be called in for outside school police. Like, how do you...
Well, I'm asking us to look at the bigger mega picture,
mm-hmm,
and what is it that we need in terms of working with kids in the schools? What are we trying to do? Are we trying to punish kids or criminalize kids? Or are we trying to teach kids? And how do we teach kids and keep them, and also how do we keep them safe in terms of how to respond to crises,
mm-hmm,
how to manage their anger, how to manage their own behaviors and their own emotions. What's the way to do
that? We'll let you all respond, but whoever wants to jump over.
I mean, Telly's chopping at the back.
I can go. So, I mean,
okay.
So, to me, it's not like rocket science at all. When you think about resources and funding, we've lost, what, over 100 paraprofessionals in the last 5 years?
In Pittsburgh Public.
In Pittsburgh Public Schools. So we need more paraprofessionals. We need paraprofessionals and more adults that are properly trained in our school buildings. We definitely need real restorative practice programs and trainings. You know, we need supports for teachers, right? So, like, teachers, that is a really rough job to deal with a whole bunch of kids all day long. My mother is a retired, educator. I don't know how she did it. But, you know, there needs to be supports for teachers as well around de-escalation, around cool-down rooms for them. So, I mean, there's plenty of things that we could do where we're not reliant on, you know, the law of the building to intervene in, like, minor behavioral issues. You know, so, like, that is one thing. That's a place that we can start. And I would like to, you know, have those, all that money that we spend on criminalization to pay for it. So,
we'll let Aaron respond.
Well, I just think we need to make something clear. So it goes back to carefully selected and properly trained. So any carefully selected and properly trained school resource officer or school police officer knows that they're not to be involved in student discipline. As a matter of fact, if you get on the NASRO homepage, it specifically says our stance on, you know, school resource officers or school police officers dealing with school discipline. So we truly do only get involved if it is a criminal offense. So just to give you an idea of how many of those carefully selected, properly trained SROs there are in our area here in Western Pennsylvania, we held two classes this summer, one in June and one in August, Brentwood High School and then Baldwin High School. We put over 85 people, SROs, through those classes. Just yesterday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions released $200,000 in grant money to fund school resource officer training nationwide. So we received that grant money through the National Association of School Resource Officers. And as long as those officers are properly trained, they're going to know that a kid, you know, on their cell phone is none of their business. They're going to know that kids spitting spitballs is none of their business. They're going to know those things, and they're going to refrain from getting involved in those types of incidents. It's also best practice to put that in the MOU. So if you're a municipality and you're working, your police department is working in a partnership with the school district, then that should be in that MOU that police officer is not to have anything to do with student discipline. Me, I work for the school district. We have our own police department. So specifically in my contract, it says that I am not to have anything to do with school discipline. So I think if you have a carefully selected, properly trained school resource officer or school police officer, some of these things that, you know, you're bringing to the table here are not going to be an issue, because they're going to focus on the mentoring, they're going to focus on the educating, they're going to focus on the law enforcement. Those infractions that you're talking about aren't against the law. So we know
that's best practice, and that's how officers are trained when they go through your program. But what about, I mean, we need to talk about accountability too, because we do know, we do know that, I mean, one instance was mentioned. We can also bring up Woodland Hills, the school resource officers. You know, there's video of abuse of students. So I guess, how do we get at this to make sure that even though they've been trained that way, you know, there is no mandated training in Pennsylvania. Is that the solution? You know, is it just...
I think so, or I wouldn't have worked, you know, with Representative Dan Miller to try and get that bill introduced, and you know, hopefully that's brought back up and it just doesn't stall out on the floor, because it's very important that these guys working in schools, you know, have all of this stuff that we're talking about, whether it's, you know, training on diversity, training on working with special needs students, you know, all of that stuff comes into play every day in a school building. So there's decisions that officers in school buildings have to make every day that the guys on the street aren't facing. So yeah. I think it should be standardized.
We're running out of time. I do have more audience questions. Did anyone want to respond to that?
I just wanted to respond to the accountability piece. The MOU is a document that creates an agreement between the school district and the SRO, who's, you know, going to be stationed in the school. Unfortunately, that is not enough, because at the end of the day, accountability is lost. You know, we have school districts and administrators who are basically like, oh, it's a police issue, I can't get involved, when really it is their job to manage the SRO. At the end of the day, they're kind of the supervisor. And then the police officer who is like, well, I was asked to get involved, you know? Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening, I think, is just the very, you know, that sort of regular presence. Like I said, you know, 90% of what an SRO is going to be doing during the school day is not going to be, it's not going to be threat related, but they're going to be interacting with the kids. And so just because they are there, school administrators lean on them more. Even when they're not there, if they're not in the schools, often schools will call the police in, and that is shown to be just as much of an issue. But I think policy, having a policy is one thing, and saying we're not going to get involved in discipline issues, but then how it plays out is quite another, especially when you have someone who is in law enforcement present at all times that is being asked to be involved in the school issue. But to speak directly to your question, which was what do we do for kids who are having these issues? You know, having a supportive, healthy school environment is, you know, all, I think most experts in the field of child development agree that that is the way to create a healthy environment, not a punitive, you know, high surveillance, threatening environment, but one that makes them feel like they belong, lets them know they're supported. So they have, I mean, the school safety commission is coming out with a report, and I believe, as my understanding, that one of the recommendations is to have more counselors, more psychologists, you know, people of this nature, because, you know, like you said, they're kids and they're babies, you know, and we are shaping them through these experiences. So how they feel, you know, even you can feel as safe as you want to be, but if you don't trust, you can assume that having an armed police officer is going to keep you safe, is what I mean to say. But if, you know, kids don't trust, if they don't feel safe, then you're never going to know what's actually going on with them anyway. They're not going to talk to you. They're not going to speak up. It's when they feel supported and when they feel safe in a real legitimate way as who they are, as individuals, and not being punished for kid behavior. It's going to help make that environment.
Angel?
I don't want to, like, throw so much shade on Pittsburgh Public Schools, because I think that this process of, you know, moving away from over criminalizing and over policing our students to giving them every single thing that they need is a process. And those things do not happen overnight, right? So, like, you know, I understand, like, we passed our school board was progressive enough to pass a suspension ban. Was it in the last spring?
I can't remember. The K-2 nonviolent infractions.
Yeah, so the school board has passed a community schools policy. They have passed a, you know, ban on suspensions. We're looking to bump that up to the fifth grade. So I think, you know, we can respect some of the leaders of our education in this city that see the problem and identify the issues and really want to make the change and make and create policy to do that. But the stuff in between is where the weeds are, right? So, like, making sure that the trainings and the supports and all the things are in the school, like, it has to catch up to the policy. So, you know, I just think that was important to state.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say one more thing. I know we're short, but just the whole, like, school resource officers not being there for discipline and, like, being there for, like, criminal activity or anything like that, like, that's still making kids, like, criminals. Like, it's still, like, giving the opportunity for them to end up in that system. That's why I don't think that they really should deal with anything except protecting the building, really, just because, like, it's kids, and, like, they're not giving them a chance to learn or fail, and it's, like, you're automatically, like, sent down this path, like, just because you make one bad choice or, like, one bad decision. I've seen it happen to too many friends or too many students that I've gone to school with, seen them get suspended and, like, drop out, like, get sent to an alternative school and drop out, or, like, do other drugs that were harder than what they were doing before. If a kid comes to school like that, like, why aren't you questioning why they feel like they can't come to school sober instead of why you feel like they are like why are you trying to criminalize them for doing the thing that they did? So like, I just think to make the schools, like you were saying, a positive place is like, give kids an opportunity to learn, and not just like educationally, but like learn about themselves and learn about the world and learn about making mistakes and like not feeling like one bad mistake can end their life like mm-hmm. that. And like let them talk to someone that can help them through what they're going through, because a lot of these kids really don't have anyone to talk to. And if they could have one person inside their school that can brighten their day, like that can make a transformation to their whole school experience, really. Like one person can really shape someone's life. And that might not be a school security guard all the time.
I want to kind of twist a little bit. Mentioning students and persons with disabilities have been mentioned a lot. And question I have is, there is a bill going through the legislature now about putting cameras on the outside of buses to stop cars that run through when the stop sign goes on the bus. Our question is, what about putting security cameras on all the buses in every school district in the Commonwealth, and coming at this from the approach of working a lot with persons with disabilities and knowing the instance we had in Pittsburgh here in February, the fact, and especially in a lot of the the lower than 36 seat buses, those mini buses, that does occur, and to try to alleviate the fact that there is way too many vulnerable students being sexually assaulted and abused on buses that are taking them to programs. And what's the position, and what do you think could be done about that? Is something you would support having cameras put on all the school buses? I know Pittsburgh Public has them, but they're on only the 36 passenger buses and higher, and not on the smaller buses. So reflections on, would that be something you'd support, to have security cameras on all the buses in every single school district in the Commonwealth? And we'll deal with how we pay for it, because I think the cost of not paying for it is more significant than figuring out how we pay for it.
So anyone want to take that?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a wonderful idea, and I think that might have been the intent of the legislators when they passed, the statute a couple years ago permitting audio recording on school buses. But like you said, you don't want to talk about the funding, but I think it all falls back on the funding. I've personally been involved in a couple cases where, there were, grown adults that were inappropriately treating, people with special needs in a bad way. And, fortunately, there were cameras on those buses that we were able to use that to prosecute them. So, if you have somebody with severe special needs that can't communicate that, then that's the only way you're going to know. So, yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think that we do need them on the buses.
There are so many more things we could get into, but we are over time. And I did want to note, we did mention funding a couple times. And I will say that, school districts right now are applying for a chunk of $60 million in new funding approved by the state. Districts can get up to $6 million for school safety efforts, and that's a pretty broad definition. There are like up to 20 different things you can get that for, so keep an eye on what your district's applying for. Those applications are due October 12th. So that's going to do it for tonight's conversation. Thank you again for joining us. We appreciate having your voices heard, and thank you so much to our panelists. This conversation was recorded and will be broadcast at a later date. Thank you so much for coming out.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys for coming out.
This has been a special presentation from 90.5 WESA on school safety. The forum was held at the Pittsburgh Community Broadcast Center on Tuesday, September 25th. It was the last of four forums focusing on issues in education. It was moderated by WESA's Sarah Schneider, and it was edited for Time.